You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined as always by my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in for Throwback Tuesday, jam-packed show coming your way. We're going to be looking back at some of the best and worst second and third round picks in Seahawks history as part of our show. And we're also going to be checking out some guards the Seahawks may have interest in with each of their three picks in the upcoming 2021 NFL draft. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Last offseason, all 32 teams partook in fully virtual offseason meetings with the COVID-19 pandemic. No on-field activities until teams reported for training camp in early August. And now it looks like there are plenty of teams that are going to be leaning towards having the same type of offseason this spring as well. One of the teams, among them, the Seahawks. This shouldn't come as a surprise because Pete Carroll talked about the benefits of Zoom conferences, the video conferencing last year, how the team was able to adapt to completely unprecedented circumstances. And we're not out of this pandemic yet. Are we making progress? Absolutely. More and more people are getting vaccinated. That's great news. But there are some surges going on across the United States, other parts of the world. We still do not have this virus under control, so it's understandable why players may still be hesitant about the idea about going to voluntary workouts. And according to Seahawks players in a statement released by the NFLPA, they don't intend to do that this offseason.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that it does make some sense because, as you said, I mean, this is voluntary off-season workouts, and there's not we have not defeated this pandemic yet. I think that, you know, look at the Seahawks. They are one of the franchises, I think, that who attacked the virus as well as just about anybody in the way that they were able to keep the franchise essentially safe. But there's a lot of other clubs out there who have struggled with this greatly. And once you bring people back into the facility and you have any type of workouts, then anything that can happen could happen and be brought back to the players' families as well. And when you've had the success and the familiarity, frankly, that the Seahawks have had, then I think that you don't necessarily have to bring everybody back together. Now, to me, the one thing that's interesting is the fact that the Seahawks, of course, are now going to be changing their offensive scheme, at least a little bit with Shane Waldron. And that was, of course, not the case last year. So I do think that it's going to make it a little bit more challenging, but at the same time, you have the same superstar at quarterback, you have the same superstar at the wide receivers, the running back position, and so because of that, I don't think that you have too much to worry about as far as turnover. So I do think that the Seahawks would most likely approach this the same way, even if their players did not. Pete Carroll has been about getting in front of this from the very get-go, so I think that the Seahawks as a franchise are going to be supporting their players in the idea of basically trying to keep this virtual until everybody feels a lot more comfortable that the pandemic is behind them.
I asked Tyler Lockett, Seattle's union representative, about this very topic today. And really the question that I asked him was, when things return to normal, we get out of this pandemic, would you like to see off-season programs return to pre-2020 form, or do you think virtual programs are here to stay? He kind of sidestepped those questions, but he did say that they had their meeting as players got together and they reached the verdict that they wanted it to be a fully virtual offseason again this year. And it's all about safety. Again, going back to the idea that these players are fearful about flying out to Seattle for OTAs or for mini camps and somehow getting infected and bringing that virus back home. And as you said, the Seahawks have been as good at combating this as any team in the NFL. They didn't have a single positive test during the entire 2020 season, the only team in the NFL that can say that. So Pete Carroll and company, they've been attacking this the right way from day one. And Carroll talked a lot about how well players responded to the Zoom press conferences. And Lockett was referencing this today, that nobody knew what to expect when they went into this program last year. It had never been like this before, but it ended up surpassing all expectations. They were able to get things done. And as you mentioned, I do think the fact they're trying to learn a new playbook, a new scheme under Shane Waldron, that does complicate things a little bit, especially for younger players. You know that Pete Carroll would like to be able to get some work on the field before training camp. But at the same time, he understands this virus and what's going on. And he's not going to force the issue asking his players to come out for voluntary workouts. And so I'm sure Pete Carroll was made aware of this, and I'm sure he was fully on board with it. And I think the key thing here, we're talking about the statement that was released today. The Broncos were the first team that released one indicating that their players are not going to be going to voluntary off-field or on-field workouts this offseason. But the Seahawks finished off their statement indicating that their hope is that eventually this is going to get under control and that's going to be safe enough for them to return to the field for mandatory workouts. So this isn't a case where Tyler Lockett and these guys are saying, we don't want to put the work in. What they're clearly saying is we would much rather work out on our own or in small groups than get together with 30 plus teammates and coaches where you are in a much more likely scenario where you're going to be able to have quick spreading of the virus. All it takes is one person having it. And who knows how many of these players have been vaccinated to this point either. There are complications there. And just the fact some veterans think, you look at last year, we don't need the offseason workouts. It proved we don't need all those on-field workouts. Injuries to an extent were lowered because of that. There are a lot of counter arguments out there from the NFLPA right now. They are pushing for this. So no big surprise the Seahawks are going down this road. I would anticipate Pete Carroll's keeping an open mind with it, as he does with pretty much everything else, except for avoiding the run game, I guess. But he's going to keep an open mind about this going into this process. Maybe they'll be able to get on the field at some point for off-season activities. But if not, they know what to expect now, and I think they can handle whatever adjustments need to be made.
Yeah, I think that just the fact, again, that Seattle had the success that they had against COVID a year ago. And again, their superstars are already in place. And I think that the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with a brand new quarterback and lots of new pieces, just won the Super Bowl, kind of proving that you can be effective in a short amount of time if you have the right pieces in place and if you have that true commitment. And so Tyler Lockett, of course, being one of the more committed players that, you know, in all of the league. So again, I don't think it's surprising at all. I think the fact that Seattle has had success already, I think that just kind of bodes well for the future, that this is something that you might see the NFL completely change. And then this might be the way that the things go from now on, that it is going to be more of a virtual offseason, trying to be able to keep the players healthy, not only from COVID, but all of the rash of injuries that we see happen every year when there are these OTAs. If it's all virtual, you're not likely to have those types of injuries. And it's one of the very few things that's actually a positive about Seattle having the small number of draft picks that they have, is they're not going to likely have a lot of young players, a lot of inexperienced players. They're going to have guys who have already gone through this process before, already have the ability to be able to take what they're learning from this virtual environment and be able to apply it onto the football field once the team deems it safe to be able to do that appropriately.
When we come back in the second quarter, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to revisit some of the best and some of the worst second and third round picks in Seahawks history. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Throwback Tuesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. We are approaching just 2 weeks until the 2021 NFL Draft. So continuing our Throwback Tuesday series, last week we looked at the best and worst first-round picks in Seahawks history. We're now going to look at day two selections. So we're going to look at second and third round picks, the best ones in Seahawks history and the worst ones in Seahawks history. I think when we talk second rounders, Rob, when you're looking at the best second round picks in Seahawks history, there are a number of names that you can throw on the list. But I think it's pretty clear that there's one player that is head and shoulders above every other second round pick that the Seahawks have made since their first draft in 1976. And that is linebacker Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, I think that's where you have to start off. He's not the only terrific linebacker that Seattle has been able to find in the second round. And Lofitsitupu, a couple of years before Bobby Wagner, of course, was a second round selection. And I think that one of the things that Seahawks fans who are looking forward to the 2021 NFL draft, Corbin, can take some solace in the fact that it's not only the middle linebacker position that Seattle's had a great deal of success. Two of the best interior offensive linemen that this club has ever drafted also came in the second round in the two centers, Kevin Mawai and Max Unger, both second round selections as well. Kevin Mawai, of course, wound up becoming a Hall of Famer, spending a lot of his time with the New York Jets as well. So to me, this is the money rounds. You know, everybody talks about the first round, but the second and third round, Seattle's had a great deal of success going back. I mean, I listed 10 different players that I think are absolute superstars that really are some of the bedrock that has been, the Seahawks success over the last several years, including a number of players that have been drafted by Pete Carroll and John Schneider. So there's a number of really good second and third round picks out there. And again, the fact that some of them play the positions that Seattle currently has some question marks about, I think it can be pretty reassuring to Seahawks fans out there who are kind of fretting about the fact that they only have the three draft picks right now.
Yeah, and I think it is worth noting when you look at the fact the Seahawks do have a second rounder in this year's draft class. John Schneider has found plenty of solid second round picks during his time at the helm. A couple of years ago, got DK Metcalf. I think if we revisit this topic in 3 or 4 years, maybe we're talking about DK Metcalf being in that same discussion as Bobby Wagner, because he's already got a second team All-Pro to his name and he just turned 23 years old. So if he continues his upward trajectory, you're talking about a potential all-time great for this franchise. So that is kind of the asterisk that I'll put with this, is there is a player on the Seahawks roster that has a chance to really change this. And of course, Bobby Wagner is not done. He's going to be 31, but he's coming off his sixth first team All-Pro selection, well over 1,100 tackles in his career, one of the best linebackers of his generation. And so when you consider all the accolades on his resume and the fact that he's still playing at a really high level, he is head and shoulders above everybody else. Max Unger is a player that I had on my short list, because how many centers have the Seahawks had that have been All-Pro selections? The answer is one, and it was Max Unger, and they've really struggled to replace him since. Justin Britt had a few decent seasons for them. That's another second-round pick you could maybe put on this list that had a solid run in Seattle, not a superstar by any means, but gave them 4 years as a solid starter at the center position. But they haven't really been able to find that replacement for Unger when you look at the second round picks they had pre-John Schneider. Brian Blades is a player that I think deserves to be on this list. Never played with great quarterbacks really for most of his career. He had Dave Craig at the end of his run in Seattle, and then he had to catch passes from the likes of Dan McGuire and Rick Meyer and Kelly Stauffer. I mean, you name it. He was catching passes from quarterbacks that had no business being under center for an NFL team. And yet he had several thousand yard seasons. I would love to see what Brian Blades' career would have been like if he played with even an average starting NFL quarterback for a couple of seasons. We might be having a different discussion, but he is still one of the best second round picks that they have made.
And I love that you mentioned the wide receiver and Brian Blades, because kind of like the offensive line, wide receiver has been one of the real strong positions for Seattle. It's not just Brian Blades. It's another current Seahawk and Tyler Lockett. I would also mention Golden Tate. I mentioned Daryl Jackson as being Daryl Jackson being a third round selection, but still day two players that Seattle has been able to really kind of mine to be able to find some of those kind of playmakers. And, know, again, we talk so much about the first round. And the first round, you know, I've been fortunate enough to talk to lots of different general managers out there, and they've always kind of said that, hey, in the first round, you're going for those home run picks. You're going for the guys who are just the freak athletes that if you hit on them, they are going to be able to turn around your franchise. But in the second and third round is where you are actually trying to address some of your team needs. So it's kind of, in my mind, it's kind of the more fun part of the draft, because I think we can see where Seattle has some concerns right now on their roster, and the fact that they do have that second round selection, and this is yet another very strong wide receiver class. Again, I think there's a good possibility that Seattle's impressive track record at wide receiver on day two is just going to grow that much more in 2021.
And it's a perfect segue when we go into the third round discussion, because two of the names you did throw out, as you mentioned, Daryl Jackson was a third rounder, one of the best third round picks from the Holmgren era. And then you also got Tyler Lockett, who we mentioned the first quarter, getting that huge extension last week, 4 years, $69.2 million, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Both those guys were home run selections in the third round. But just like the second round, where you've got one player that stands out above the rest, you have another future Hall of Famer that is still under center for the Seahawks, thank goodness. Russell Wilson, clearly the best third-round pick the Seahawks have ever made. You could make an argument that Russell Wilson is one of the best third-round picks made by any team in NFL history. When you're talking about a position at quarterback that you often don't find top-level starters beyond the first or second round, there are obviously exceptions, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson being two of them, but a lot of the time your quarterbacks, the big-time starters, come in the early rounds. And so to get a player of Wilson's caliber that has established franchise records in passing touchdowns, passing yards, has been a Pro Bowler seven times. He's been an All-Pro selection at one point in his career. Several seasons he's been in the hunt as an MVP candidate, threw 40 touchdowns last season. He basically owns Seattle's record books now, and he's only going to be 33 years old in the fall. So we're talking about a player that has had a phenomenal career to this point and still has a lot of time to continue stuffing the stat sheet and building his resume for getting into Canton as one of the best quarterbacks of this era. So he's clearly got to be the number one guy. But you've got Jackson, you've got Tyler Lockett. I think it'd be remiss not to mention Brandon Mebane either. Captain Belly Roll himself, he is one of the best third-round picks the Seahawks have made as well. When you consider how valuable he was to those Legion of Boom defenses, never got a lot of recognition compared to, say, Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and those guys. But in the middle, it was really tough to run in the Seattle Seahawks because you had that big fella stuffing the trenches, and he was an underrated pass rusher for a good portion of his career as well.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Brandon Mebane, because I think that sometimes we focus so much on the so-called skill position talent, you know, and as I mentioned before with like Kevin Mowai and the fact that he had some great memories in Seattle and then wound up obviously having a great deal of success elsewhere. With Mebane, he had most of his success in Seattle, but then wound up going a little bit south to the Chargers. And you know, there was a lot of talk that one of the reasons why that Seattle moved away from Mebane is because they just thought that, hey, he's getting a little bit old. He's at the end of his career. I mean, he wound up playing for another 4 or 5 years at a high level for the Chargers. So a really underrated and terrific football player that Seattle was able to pluck, you know, at 85th overall. But you're right. The biggest success was 75 overall. Russell Wilson, you know, just absolutely a phenomenal player. The best draft pick in Seahawks history, the best player in Seahawks history, and a future Hall of Famer, to be able to get him in the third round. I think that we're still talking about Seattle being without a Super Bowl title if number three isn't on the roster. So the fact that Seattle was able to bring him in there, I think that is, again, one of the one of the greatest accomplishments in this franchise's history.
When we look at the worst picks, I don't want to spend too much time delving into these because it's like beating a dead horse when you're talking about busted draft picks, especially second and third rounders, and especially Malik McDowell. Obviously, most Seahawks fans are going to say that's the biggest second round bust for Seattle. Never even played a training camp snap for the team because of an ATV accident. But to me, if you're looking at the biggest second round bust, I want to look at players that actually had a chance to prove themselves in the field, because we never got to see what Malik McDowell could do. So I think there is a sense of unfairness to that by saying that he's the biggest bust when you never got to see what he could do on a field. You got to see what Doug Thomas could do in 1991, second round pick out of Clemson. Most catches he had in a season was 11 for 95 yards, his third year in the league. You're talking about a second round selection at the receiver position, had single digit receptions his first 2 years. That's the same draft class that you had Dan McGuire as your first round picks. You want to talk about some huge whiffs? There's a reason that that draft set this franchise back for half a decade. They just really whiffed on those two picks. So I think Doug Thomas has to be in discussion there. Worst second rounder. You could put Christian Michael there as well. Never lived up to his draft billing as the heir apparent to Marshawn Lynch, 2013 second round pick. And then in the third round, CJ Procise, another recent player that just couldn't stay healthy, I think deserves to be on that list because he just couldn't stay healthy enough to make an impact. Amara Darboh, John Moffitt. I noticed a lot of our picks for the third round are ones from the John Schneider era. That might be the round, aside from Tyler Lockett, where Schneider's had the most misses.
Well, it's one of the nice reasons that Seattle doesn't have a third round pick right now, Corbin. You know, it's like they basically are just recognizing, like, hey, if this is a round that we've struggled in, let's stay the heck out of it, you know. But no, in all seriousness, as you mentioned with Doug Thomas, the wide receiver, he was selected 51st overall. And for to him to have the struggles that he did, as well as the fact that he followed up Dan McGuire, and then David Daniels, the wide receiver that was selected a little bit, you know, in that same draft in third round. So that was just a truly a horrific draft for the Seahawks. You mentioned Christian Michael is another one that is you know, the late second round. CJ Procise is a third round selection. I've got another one for you that was more in that second round, right at the very end. Anton Palapoy, which a buddy of mine used to call him Palapoo. He just not a terrific, a great deal of production considering that he was the 60th overall selection that year. So, yeah, Seattle has had, unfortunately, their fair share of misses on day two as well. But as we just were talking about, I mean, I think that it's pretty easy to come up with 10 or so quality second and third round picks over the last 20 years or so. I think that if you take out the players who weren't able to have an immediate impact because of durability issues, you know, like a Malik McDowell, for example, then the fact that Seattle only has five or six or so players, I think over the last several years that, you know, they haven't had that much success as second and third round picks, it actually is a pretty good compliment to not only the scouting staff that's in place right now, but the scouting staff that's been working in Seattle for years and years.
And I think the fact that we didn't mention Frank Clark and Jaron Reed when we're talking second-round picks, two guys that had pretty darn good runs in Seattle during their time with the team, I think that tells you the type of talent that they have been able to get in those two rounds on day two, particularly the second round. That has seemed to be one of the hot rounds for John Schneider. He's found a lot of really good impact players in the second round. Third round, he's found players like Russell Wilson. There's been more misses in that round, but like you said, there's only a handful of players, so I think you can say it's a pretty good indicator the Seahawks have overall been a pretty solid drafting team, especially during the Schneider-Carroll era. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to swing to the upcoming draft, continuing our draft prospect series. We're going to go back to the offensive line, looking at guards that may fit the Seahawks in the second, fourth, and seventh rounds. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. The NFL draft is weeks away, so it's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to, and the Locked On NFL draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Continuing our series, we've been breaking down position by position players that could be fits for the Seahawks in each of their three picks, second rounder, fourth rounder, and seventh rounder. We're going back to the offensive line. It's interesting because guard was a position when the offseason opened that we anticipated the Seahawks were going to potentially be using their second-round pick at that spot. Then they go out and they trade for Gabe Jackson. They trade a fifth-round pick to the Raiders to get the veteran offensive lineman. So now you have him and Damian Lewis. I think most people anticipate the Seahawks probably are going to look at other positions, including center, if they're going to be trying to address their offensive line, maybe get a tackle for the future as well. Guard seems to be well set, but you and I have mentioned it before. There is the possibility, Pete Carroll's hinted at it, maybe Damian Lewis is going to be your center long-term, and if that's going to happen, then you can draft another guard that you can put with Gabe Jackson. There are some really good guards that should be available in the second and third rounds. The Seahawks have a pick at 56. So let's talk second-round options here, Rob. For me, I watched Georgia's film, and I just could not stop watching Ben Cleveland at 6'6", around 350 pounds. He looks like the mountain off Game of Thrones. You often don't hear 350 pounds and the word chiseled in the same sentence, but that's who Ben Cleveland is. This dude is ripped for an offensive lineman. He's just a hulk of a man, and he uses that size really well at the line of scrimmage. He's a punisher. He wants to knock people off the ball and drive them into the turf. He is a pancake chef, and I love watching him on film. He can get to the second level, surprising athleticism as a downhill blocker, and he gets his hands on you, it's game over. If there's anything in his game that concerns me a little bit, I do think that his lateral quickness could be an issue going against more athletic pass rushers, but he's been able to compensate for that with his length, and I expect that he's still going to be able to do that to an extent at the NFL level. To me, he's a pretty safe day two selection of the guard spot as long as he can stay healthy. There have been a few durability concerns, but this is a big-time player that I think would fit Seattle's scheme, and I think he's a good enough zone blocker that even if they're going to run more outside zone, I think he can acclimate himself.
I went with a slightly different direction here with Kendrick Green. And, you know, one of the mock drafts that we were looking at during yesterday's show, Corbin, kind of projected Seattle to take Kendrick Green, who played some guard as well as some center at Illinois. And it's his quickness, it's his balance that really stands out to me. He's a much smaller man than Ben Cleveland. Let's face it, just about everybody is. But at the same time, I really am intrigued by his positional versatility. And that's kind of the strategy I was taking here, because as you made the point early on, the Seattle, of course, brought in Gabe Jackson. They have Damian Lewis, who was terrific a year ago. You also have Jamarco Jones. You also have Phil Haynes. You also have Jordan Simmons. Seattle has bodies at the guard position. It's just whether or not they believe that those guys are going to be able to be difference makers. So I think that Kendrick Green, because he has the positional versatility, whereas Ben Cleveland, I think, is just purely a guard, then Kendrick Green or guys like that, Josh Myers maybe from Ohio State, another big guy who has some experience at other positions, projects well there. I think those are some of the guys who might make some sense if Seattle stays at number 56 or in a possible small trade down.
Going to the fourth round, a little bit different style player here. I was talking about Ben Cleveland being the mountain. I call David Moore from Grambling State the stump, and this is not a derogatory term. He is just short and squatty. They list him at 6'1". He looks shorter than that on the field, well over 300 pounds, a powerful dude, and he's got good athleticism for being a short, squatty offensive lineman. This is a guy that's explosive out of his stance. He can drive people off the ball. He had an impressive week at the Senior Bowl. You're still going to have the questions about his level of competition coming from an FCS school, going to the NFL. But we've seen plenty of FCS players have success at the next level, and more are having immediate success in the NFL. So this is a player that I really like from a scheme fit, because I think he's got enough athleticism to zone block. He can win as a downhill blocker. He excels at getting to the second level. In pass protection, he's got some technique issues. He's got to do a better job of getting his hands located properly. NFL defenders are going to take advantage of that if you don't have a good striking point. So he's going to need coached up on that. But I've mentioned this before, and I think fans think I'm joking when I say this, but the fact that he's short intrigues me, because you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback. I mean, what's better than having a good guard that's also short and your quarterback can actually see over him? And so I do think that that is another advantage that would make some sense with this particular pick. So I like David Moore as a fourth, maybe a third rounder in some cases. But I think in Seattle's case, I think he's a fourth round pick that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I think that you just make a really good argument about the fact that if you have a shorter offensive lineman, it's easier for your shorter quarterback to be able to look over the top. And, you know, and let's face it, I mean, as a former offensive lineman myself, as a former offensive line coach myself, low man wins. I mean, anybody who knows much about football knows that. And if you have that natural height advantage or leverage advantage because you are a shorter player, it's just that much easier to get under the pads of your opponent and be able to knock them off the ball. And David Moore can absolutely do that. And while he is, again, much smaller than Ben Cleveland, he is still just as ripped. And so he is another very intriguing athlete that I think that Seattle absolutely would be interested in. I'm going to go again, as I mentioned before, with kind of the theme I'm using with some of these guards. I'm going with guys who have some versatility. And this time I'm looking for a guy who can be a little bit more of a swing guy who has some experience outside of tackle, and that being Royce Newman from Ole Miss. Now, he's 6'5", 310 pounds. He's got long enough arms, 33 3/4 inches, that some people are going to prefer to keep him at the right tackle position, in which he played at a pretty high level, not only for Ole Miss this year, but also at the Senior Bowl. I don't think that he has the foot speed to be able to handle the edge rushers that you're going to see in the NFC West division. But I think you move him inside the guard, where he was the starting left guard for Ole Miss previously in his career, and allow him to kind of be that swing guy. I think that that's where he would excel. And to me, his athletic ability, his size, I think would be really intriguing if he was available in the fourth round as well.
And swinging to Seattle's last pick, the seventh round, this is a really good class for guards. But I do think that once you get to the late fifth into the sixth round, now maybe there will be a guy that unexpectedly falls and then Seattle can take him. But I think you're going to end up in a position where you're going to be picking players that are really raw, or players that have had some injury issues, or maybe a little bit of both. There's going to be a drop-off by that point, even more so than you're going to see at some other positions. I went with Jack Anderson out of Texas Tech, a former five-star recruit. This is one of the best players that Texas Tech has ever brought into their program. And he started some games at both guard spots. Now, he had a shoulder injury that cost him most of the 2019 season. This is a player that at around 6'4", 6'5", 315 pounds, has decent athleticism for the position. He's not a great athlete, but he's not necessarily a bad athlete either. He's got decent lateral quickness. So you can see him potentially being a scheme fit. He plays with some anger, plays with some tenacity, not great hand technique, and he's kind of an upper body. He's a reverse vase. This is a guy that really his lower body, he just doesn't have the anchor that you would expect for a player of his size. And so that allows him to get pushed around at times, and especially in the passing game. And so I look at this guy as a player that, with his durability question marks, the fact that maybe his body isn't necessarily the way you would want it to be coming into the NFL, he's going to have to get stronger in his lower half. And he's a guy that is not overly refined with his hand technique either. He's a player that's going to need some work, but I think his upside is to be a potential swing guard that could play either spot. I don't know that he's got a starter ceiling, but he could be a quality backup in the league. And he also might have some potential to play center as well.
one more player I would mention, and this is not only because the fact that I think he can be a swing player, but also a little bit of an acknowledgement to some of the terrific mock drafts that were submitted by our listeners yesterday. And one of the players that I failed to talk about a little bit yesterday that I was a big fan of is Robert Hainsey, the right tackle from Notre Dame. Doesn't get nearly as much attention as Liam Eikenberg, the left tackle, or Aaron Banks, the left guard, but Hainsey was the captain for Notre Dame the last couple of years. He's a 3-year starter at that right tackle position. He was kind of the picture of durability and toughness and accountability. It's just like a lot of the Notre Dame tackles over the last couple of years, he's got kind of short, stubby arms. He's 32 and an eighth inch arm. So I think that he's going to wind up moving inside to the NFL. I think that he should go closer to the fourth or fifth round. But as you mentioned, Corbin, we're going to see some offensive linemen who are going to drop down the board if they don't have that kind of traditional NFL body. And because Hainsey doesn't have any much experience at guard, and he does have short arms, and therefore a lot of people are going to project him at guard, he could be one of those candidates that slips down the board a little bit. Robert Hainsey is going to be a starter in the NFL. And if he is somehow available that late in the draft, to me, he is the type of offensive lineman that you would like to draft, because again, I think that he's going to wind up very much outplaying where he's ultimately selected.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Wednesday show, we're going to swing back to the defense with the safety position as we continue our draft preview. And we're going to be outlining 5-step plans to cap off Seattle's offseason on a high note. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.